seat. Sit over there.
Huh?
I won't hear you if you sit there.
All right.
Good morning. My name is Michael Copeland. I'm not Jim Ailey, but I work for the same company. So as a representative of traditional media, thanks for having me here. We are here to talk about the future of news, and we're here with two gentlemen who are making it or inventing it. To my right, Dan Gilmore, who is the founder and director of the Center for Citizen Media, and also he was a longtime columnist for the Merck and a big fan of the First Amendment. To my left, Dave Weiner, who has the longest-running blog on the internet, I think, Scripting News, and also the founder of DaveNet. And as my friend and colleague Om Malik says, he's the godfather of RSS. We can thank Dave for that. Dave, and in the spirit of what these guys do, we should make it a conversation. So if there's folks who have questions or comments as we go along, you know, chime in, please. But I'll start, Dave. I was looking at your blog this morning, and in addition to being a fan of the West Wing, I saw a quote from Mark Cuban on your site. It said, 99% of blogs are about what someone has to say. 99% of traditional media is about making money. And then next to it, you put Bing, exclamation point. What are the implications of Bing?
Well, I think, is that really the question you want me to answer?
Why did you
I mean, maybe you what might want to ask me why I agree with, I mean, it means that I agree with what he's saying. I think the emphasis was on, was basically, it's not so much, I think it was the second sentence was the key idea, which was that professional media is about making money, and bloggers generally are blogging because they have something that they want to say, something that they want to communicate, which I think is, I thought it was, and Bing means, yeah, that's right.
You just mentioned to me as we were waiting to come up here that your blog was sort of accidental in some ways. I mean, so you had something to say. What have you been trying to say since 1997?
Well, I was having trouble getting information out about a product that I was developing, and I was making Macintosh software. It was actually in 1994, and the press, the conventional wisdom in the media was that there was no new Macintosh software, and so as a result, they couldn't report about new Macintosh software, even though there was plenty of new Macintosh software. Right. This is one of the weird things about the media, is that they report conventional wisdom, they don't necessarily report the facts. And so I noticed through sort of an iterative process that I could write publicly on the internet and go straight to the people that I wanted to communicate with and the people who wanted new Macintosh software. And as a result, we did what the last speaker was talking about. The key word in all of this is disintermediation, which means, fancy word, it just means routing around a middleman who's sort of controlling, a gatekeeper who's controlling a conversation. In this case, we routed around the news media, and quite effectively. And in the process, defined a new medium that will always be route-aroundable. The day bloggers ever start putting up these gates and try to become gatekeepers, new bloggers will come along and just route around them. So,
and Dan, this is your one of your focuses, that it's whether it's routing around or you call it a move from collecting the news to this move toward a conversation. And what are the implications of that for what you do, and then also for companies like mine?
Well,
the people who consume the news, for that matter.
Well, the collision of media and technology is having amazing impact on journalism, which is the thing I'm most interested in seeing proceed into the future. And the constituencies of journalism that include the journalist, the least important constituency, and the former audience that now is part of a conversation, not simply being lectured to, and companies, whether they're media companies or other kinds of companies and organizations, something new being done to them, with all these conversations going on about them and around them, and they can also use and should use the same tools to join the conversation with their own various constituencies. So there's a great opportunity there for the corporate world to be part of this. But for the journalism, it's the professionals have to start listening harder. I mean, the first rule of a conversation is you have to listen. And this should involve bringing the audience into the process of the journalism itself.
Does the ecosystem change in the world of journalism? I mean, does it become a world of individual blogs and, you know, I have something to say, so now I'm going to go say it?
Yeah, all of the above. There's going to be a much more diverse and interesting ecosystem coming out of the stuff that Dave, among others, has invented. And where we can, I hope we're not going to lose big journalism, because I think big journalism does a lot of great stuff that we need in our society if we're going to have an informed citizenry. But I want to see that be part of an ecosystem where there's all kinds of things, from the sole blogger who's focused on a very narrow but very deep niche, all the way to the things we have today and everything in between, where it's symbiotic as opposed to entirely competitive.
Right. Dave, what do you see the role as? I mean, or do you see the role for big media going forward? But what's the role of big media, and what's your role as you see it?
Well, I think big media, I don't even know what that means, but I think they have to earn a new place. They have a new relevance. I was talking with, not to drop names or anything, but I was talking with Dan Rather the other day.
Who's he?
He was the former anchor of CBS News.
And I was a witness to
that. And he was a witness. Dan Gilmore was a witness to this. And I said, you know, you should be a blogger. And he, to my surprise, he said he was interested in doing it. And had he been a blogger at the time that they were under fire from the bloggers, it would have, I believe, a very different outcome for him and for CBS News. Thing was, they were paralyzed by this. They totally didn't understand what was happening. So that's one example of big media that didn't deal with it very well. An example of big media that embraced blogging in an incredibly effective way would be the New Orleans Times-Picayune during Hurricane Katrina. It's one of these things that, you know, years before that, I was saying, you know, we need blogging and we need RSS because we're going to have to respond to catastrophes. And what I was thinking was the role that blogging played in covering 9/11, which actually was not a small role. We had eyewitnesses there reporting long before the big media had reportage from there. In fact, and of course, they were using our reportage in what they were doing. And at the time, I said, you know, all this stuff has become much more important because this is going to be the way we're going to respond to catastrophes. And then along comes Katrina, and it was so useful to have blogging for them that nobody even noticed it, okay? It was just sort of like a matter-of-fact thing. They just shifted into blogging mode, and all of a sudden, instead of having a deadline at whatever, 5 p.m. every evening, they were just publishing round the clock. They weren't printing a newspaper. They were, of course, using blogging software to do this. And the whole news flow of a major city that had been dispersed across the entire country, of course, was now, the whole pulse was being fed by blogs. And I think ultimately, when it's all said and done, we won't even notice the transformation. We'll just accept it because we're going to be getting a different quality of news, a different, you know, more frequently, and we're going to expect more from news because blogging does challenge them to be better.
It's important in this context to note that blogging is almost a proxy word for things that are the part of the democratization of content creation, the fact that we can all create different things and write on the web as easily as we can read from it. So it includes things like audio in podcasting and videos and things. And the catastrophe scenarios we've seen with, in particular, the tsunami and the London bombings last July, the advent of the person on the ground with a camera of one sort or another, to the point that the images we remember most from those events probably are the ones taken by not professional journalists, but people who were on the spot.
Well, there were no professional journalists at the tsunami, right? I mean, that was all amateur journalism there. Yeah. If it weren't for them, we would have absolutely no imagery of it at all.
And the professionals did a great job of capturing what happened afterwards and the aftermath and putting great resources in, but we remember those images of the wave crashing ashore and the and the London Underground, the singular image from that event that everyone remembers is that green-tinged, smoky-looking thing from the subway where people are escaping, and a guy with a cloth over his mouth from a camera phone.
What I find difficult in all of this coverage that just, you know, comes blasting at you, and given the number of, you know, the sheer size of blogs and podcasts and now video vlogs, the unfortunate word for that, but how it's grown so quickly, how do you ferret out which are the sites that I should, A, trust, B, be interested in, and hear about them to begin with? There's just so much noise out there that it's hard to find the right frequency.
Well, you already explained to us how you do it. You ask Am Malik what to do, right? But it's not a joke. I mean, you go to somebody who you trust in a personal level. I would trust him, too. I happen to know him as well. And I ask him by reading his blog. I mean, I don't actually literally ask him what I should read. I read his blog, and then I've over time become familiar with who he's reading, and I start reading them if I find them interesting. You know, you develop your own. There was an article today in the Wall Street Journal called Me, 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 right? And they're talking about 20 years ago there was this vision that you would have your own custom newspaper. Well, that's exactly what we're doing. You're going to assemble your own newspaper with your own editorial staff, and you're going to go back to them as long as you like them. And then when you don't like them, you're going to pick somebody else.
The idea of the Daily Me has been out there for a while. MIT popularized that. But what's coming, which is really going to be cool, is the Daily We, where we combine not just the things we are interested in personally, but the recommendations and voting and reputation, because popularity is not enough, and combine a whole bunch of things into something that gets a sense of what the various communities that we're part of, whether they're communities of interest or of location, and find out what is really important through this process of editors at some level and people we know or people we've come to trust. And we're pretty early in this. There's nothing out there that's captured all of this in any good way yet, but I take for granted that there will be and that it's a huge opportunity for someone to start, you know, for people to do companies based on that idea.
Do we run the risk of, I mean, I find myself when I read blogs, I go down this rabbit hole and it gets narrower and narrower and narrower, and then I'm so focused on one single subject that I kind of lose sight of the outside world. I mean, when we talk about the weekly we, I just wonder, there seems to be a responsibility on the part of news to inform in kind of, you know, a general sense. I just wonder if, who then takes on that responsibility?
You do. You do.
It's, yeah, unfortunately, bad news is that you have more responsibility than you ever have. There's no more sort of like delegating your responsibility to other people. Individuals have the responsibility to be informed, and they've always really had it. We just sort of gave up on it, you know, in the last century. We just gave up. We decided we weren't going to be informed. And the medium of this 21st century at least makes it possible to be informed. And as we've been doing that, then the big media has been sort of like withdrawing, you know, sort of on a unilateral basis. I mean, try watching cable news on any given evening and see if there's anything worth watching. It used to be, but not anymore.
I mean, I still want.
By the way, you have a person down there. I think that's Esther Dyson.
I still want the editorial judgment from the publications that I trust, like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and The Economist and a few others. I still want that. I still crave that. But I wanted it to be part of a process where I sort of roll my own and create
a better report than the one that's manufactured. But I want the bloggers fact-checking them, though, at the same time. I mean, Business Week has an article today where they quoted somebody else with a quote of mine. Well, did they contact me and say, well, we're sorry we gave your quote to somebody else? No, but the person who they did attribute the quote to did get in touch with me and apologized for their mistake. They're making mistakes all the time. They always were making mistakes.
They who?
The big media. They were always, and they still do. And at least now we have the mechanism with which to call them on those mistakes. Maybe they'll become a little bit more sensitive now that they know that they're going to get outed when they make the mistakes.
Esther.
Hi. Interestingly, I began my career as a fact checker for Forbes. Fortune still has fact checkers. I don't know about Business Week. But
probably not, would be my guess.
I want to go back to your answer, who has the responsibility? You do. Is a wonderful answer. But the problem is many people are not fulfilling their responsibility to be fully informed citizens, to read both the red and the blue state versions, to find out about more than who is the latest movie star. We have a society that believes in a lot of individual freedom, but we also believe occasionally in collective action. And we have state-funded education. It may or may not be very good. I'd like you both, there's no answer, but I'd like you both to address this a little more, a little less glibly. What do you do about the role of institutions? What is the responsibility of institutions as opposed to individuals to make us not just a free, but a well-educated and well-informed society?
Well, you start with the institution of parenthood, and parents need to teach children, and schools then need to follow up on that to teach some sort of media literacy, and I mean that not in a in the old-fashioned sense, but the idea that we are learning things all the time and that we're constantly educating ourselves and that we're skeptical. We are not teaching kids today to be sufficiently skeptical about what they see.
And suppose the parents don't rise to that responsibility.
I can't hear you.
Suppose the parents don't rise to that responsibility.
I can't fix that. I can provide some tools online that will help. I can talk a lot. I can try and help people find good material. But if we don't have a culture that cares, that's bigger than I'm capable of solving. I think though that the act of getting more engaged with the news may may lead toward more engagement with social and political parts of our world in a way that people actually become more activist, which I think would be a good outcome.
Can I take, I don't have any faith in institutions, Esther, and I also think this is a mistake the tech industry always makes. And this is the tech industry, right? Tech industry's point of view is that we are here to solve every problem and we're in a special place that where we can actually solve big problems. We can't. We can make technology products and I would say I don't consider myself part of the technology industry anymore. I actually feel like I'm part of the publishing industry. I think necessity will be the mother of invention on this one. I think things will get continually worse until people realize out of necessity that they need to be informed. Katrina was a good example of that, okay? People that were thrown out of their houses didn't have a place to go, right? They needed information, and so they needed to develop new ways to be informed because their reality had been disrupted sufficiently that they needed to become more information gathering. If this war in Iraq continues and the draft comes back, I'll bet you we go through another period where the 18-year-old males, at least, are going to be very interested in information. Maybe not. Maybe we can't solve any problems, but that's not on topic, I don't think. That's not something that is so big that human beings can't, I think, discuss this. Or you could discuss it at the World Economic Forum. That would probably be a good place.
Okay, I'm not running this panel, but let me just say one more point. Why not create some new institutions? Yes, they will then grow sclerotic.
Do you believe that would work?
Yes.
Okay.
It'll work better than just saying, no, I'm not responsible.
I'm not. I can't create. I just answered honestly and truthfully. I don't believe in institutions. But if you can start an institution and it actually shows promise, I'll write you a check. I'll be happy to. And I'll contribute my time, too.
I think Dan's trying to do that.
I'm trying. I'm not here to promote my center. But I think that we have to provide a lot of different thinking than we've had out there in the past. And I do, though, think that people who are joining conversations online where they solve problems collaboratively, even if they're about something that has nothing to do with the big issues of the day, the big political and social ones, if they've solved or made progress on something in that collaborative process by using these new tools, I think maybe they're going to have more recognition that maybe they can solve some other problems in the same way. And if the tools and the ways to do it are more obvious to them, maybe they will venture outward and further. That's one of my hopes.
Do the citizens, in citizens' media, does their training just sort of happen as they go along? The people that you work with, what inspires them to, A, participate, and why do they need to put it out there? Why can't they just tell their neighbors? Or is that what they're doing?
It depends at what kind of media we're talking about. People don't need a lot of training to post a picture up to Flickr. That comes pretty easily with any modest level of computer savvy and digital photo savvy. Understanding the difference between conversation and journalism is a separate issue, and one, again, that I'm hoping to help with, but that most of what's out there is not journalism, and most bloggers don't want to be journalists.
Oh, come on. That's silly.
They don't.
What is journalism? I mean, why isn't it journalism? What isn't journalism? Tell me what isn't journalism, okay? We always have this discussion about what is journalism. When you say bloggers don't do journalism, then you need to explain to me what isn't journalism.
Many do. I'm just saying most bloggers don't think of themselves as doing and don't want to be tied to the word journalism.
I mean, can I just take a stab at the question that
yeah.
you asked? I don't think people need training on how to do journalism. I think that basically... you need sort of the basic ingredients that human beings are sort of born with, which is honesty and integrity, okay? You need to not knowingly say something that's false, and you need to disclose your conflicts of interest. And then you have integrity. And at that point, you're every bit a journalist. There's this sort of pedestal that professionals stand on that they would have you believe that they're doing something very, very, very special. But they're not doing something special. They're just telling you what they think happened. And can an ordinary person do that? Yeah, we do that all the time. We're always telling people what we think happened. Journalists don't do anything special. They don't.
I think there are a few different principles that go into journalism as opposed to specific practices that include what you said. But, I mean... accuracy, yes. Thoroughness is another one. Fairness is another one. Transparency is one that.
But
has
I don't
not
think you see a whole lot of that in journalism, in the professional side of things. You talk about it a lot, but you don't actually see it very often.
I think we see more of it there than in a lot of what goes on online. And I'm not putting down what goes on online. I'm just saying that. We need to also find ways to surface the signal out of the noise.
You don't have any studies that show that, do you? I mean, you're just going on your gut there, right? You don't actually have data that proves that, do you?
I don't know that there have been studies of that.
Well, there you go. You see, you're being a journalist now, and you're telling us you know something, but you don't actually have any data to back that up.
But
so you're doing exactly what bloggers are supposedly doing, and it goes on all the time.
But does your gut tell you that Dan is wrong?
Well, I have anecdotes. You see, now I have anecdotes that agree with what Dan says, right? But they're just anecdotes. That's just my opinion, okay? Well, I've seen situations where I was ravaged by the bloggers, and the professionals came to my rescue. The professionals came in, and they did what I considered a far more dispassionate look at the facts, and they reported still pretty harshly, and then they came back. They did something the bloggers didn't do, okay, which I chastised the bloggers for doing this, okay, is that they came back and took a second look. 2 weeks later, once all the tempers had settled down in this particular situation, they came back and took another look and said, look, we got these things wrong, and this is not really good. There's no reason that bloggers can't do that, okay? And they should. On the other hand, I've seen plenty of times when the journalists are so dead set on a particular idea, and they just simply won't get shaken off of it. And in doing so, they create the need for bloggers to come in and expose a set of information that the journalists...
Can you just give us one example?
I gave you one at the beginning. The fact that there's no Macintosh software was a really good one.
How many people in here have been covered by professional journalists in one form or another? Okay, how many of you wish, like me, that every journalist would have the experience of being covered? Sure. Do you think that would help?
Can we ask another question?
That would be, I'm leading up to something which Dave started with, is you can do that with your own, you can communicate yourselves about what you perceived in that process.
And yeah, we belong to the same church, Dan and I do, basically. So when we argue about this stuff, it's out of love, not hate, okay? but I'd like to ask another question, which is, in those stories, people who have been covered by journalists, did they get the story right? Raise your hand if they didn't get the story right.
Did they ever get the story right?
I mean,
there's always something that's not quite.
Well, I know,
that doesn't feel exactly right.
I know, but did they ever really nail it? I mean, did they ever really nail it? Have you ever had a piece of journalism written about you that really gets you? I've not ever. I don't think I've ever had that.
I have.
Really?
Yeah. I just want to make sure that if anyone had a problem with the story I wrote about them, you can talk to me afterwards. clearly, there's a tension, not between you two, but between, you know, traditional media and blogs. And part of it, I think, is that, you know, we see you guys either as the savior or, you know, the enemy. And
we're the enemy.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Which are you?
Savior.
I just thought I would settle that right.
Okay.
That's a typical reporter question, right? I mean, it's black or white. Who was it? It was a New York Times columnist that wrote this one. Is that basically every reporter has to present the pro and the con, even when there's no pro and con to it. So a reporter would write a story that says, is the earth flat, okay? And the pro and the con, right? Well, the fact is the earth is not flat, right? And why can't you report a story that says it's discovered that the earth is flat? It's not always true that there's two sides to every story. Reporters have yet to figure that one out.
Usually there are more than two.
Well, but often there are actual facts, and you won't get very much of that, you know. And
so it sounds to me that what you do, Dave, is not the news. Well, let's get a question here. That's Dan.
It's Dan Farber. I'm a journalist, and I'm a recovering blogger.
I'm a recovering journalist, so we're sort of even.
But, you know, I think this discussion about what's a journalist, what's a blogger, you know, is kind of not very useful, because it's really about who do you trust, who has authority, reputation, etc. There are bloggers who you trust, there are journalists who you trust, and that's the way it is. So to have this argument about, oh, journalists or big media good, bloggers, you know, not good, or the opposite, it's useless.
Yep.
I mean, you really should talk about that. We have these tools. Everybody has access to these tools. There's all this new information out there. And there is a challenge for people to discover, like, well, what should I trust? What should I read? And that's why we have all this activity going on in building these new filters.
Well, and the issue that we've not gotten to at all today is the elephant in the room of money, which is that the business model for traditional media is being whacked, as we sit here, by... in print, companies that are going after the advertising revenue.
But they want us to sum up. And
yeah, one last question.
Okay. That's a whole separate issue, but it's a pretty important one. How are we going to get through this with quality and preserving the best stuff while having that more diverse ecosystem? I'm a little bit concerned.
Well, thank you both. I do agree with Dan. It's a question of trust, so go out there and find the bloggers and the media that you trust, and
thanks.
We'll talk about this later. Thanks.